I'm Pete Soderling, and welcome to the Zero Prime Podcast, where we explore the early stories of top startups via the experiences of their engineer founders.
This week on the show, I chat with Wes McKinney, a living legend in the open source data science world. Wes has authored or contributed to notable projects such as Pandas, Arrow, Parquet, Ibis, and others. Wes is the co-founder and CTO of Voltron Data, a new startup working on accelerated computing technologies powered by Apache Arrow. Wes, it's great to have you back. We had you on a previous show, DC Thursday, and we chatted about Arrow. Time flies, especially when I think about how long we've known each other, because it's actually 10 years now. We met in 2012, and it's been great to watch your career move publicly and personally because we've known each other over those years. So it's really great to have you on the show.
Yeah, glad to be here.
I want to acknowledge that you've been the instigator behind multiple significant open source projects in the data world. Obviously, folks know you from Pandas and Arrow, perhaps other things that you've built that might not be as popular, but also you've started several companies in the space, including DataPad, Ursa Labs, and now Voltron Data. So it's always made me curious from your experience, what's hard about monetizing open source? And I'm curious to hear about the key lessons that you might have learned along the way.
It's very hard. I will say, you know, 10 years ago when we first met in 2012, it was a lot harder than it is today. I think there's more of a general awareness in amongst businesses, the value, the importance of open source, particularly open source infrastructure projects. Like, people get why they need to be funded and supported, like why the maintenance needs to be sustainable. And so there's more of a willingness from businesses to fund contracts or to directly fund open source developers, or to have arrangements where there's a statement of work and there might be some, like, a mixture of pure open source development work that's getting funded along with some specific customizations or custom software development that the business needs. But I think nowadays there's more of an acceptance that many solutions need to be open source, so that there is a community of developers that can be created to continue supporting and developing the projects. That's certainly been true with Pandas and Arrow and Ibis and Substrate and some other projects that I've been involved with. So people increasingly see it as, like, it's good that it's open source, and it's good that there's other people who have an interest, a strategic interest in the health and welfare of the projects. Of course, like, creating businesses to monetize open source is tricky from a sustainability standpoint. Building a venture-backed company that has an open core or open source projects at its foundation, I think there's increasingly a well-established playbook. And now it's great that we have a number of very successful companies that have gone public that are based on, or that are pre-IPO, that are based on open source software, companies like Confluent or Databricks, for example. And so it's getting easier and easier. And so I think the more that investors understand how to build an open source business, and there's more willingness from corporations to have business relationships that involve open source software, it's become a lot more straightforward for entrepreneurs to create companies with a substantial open source component.
So obviously there's the open core model, where there's premium features sort of added around the proprietary features added around the open core. There's the hosted model, which we're seeing a lot with cloud hosted versions of open source tools. One thing, though, that founders come to me repeatedly on is, I've built this cool library. It's a utility. It's very useful. How do I build a company around this tool?
Right. That's the million dollar or the billion dollar question. And there isn't a good answer for every project. So in some cases, there isn't necessarily a business purely based on the tool that can be created, or it may not be. Maybe you could create a cloud service or some sort of software as a service that provides a managed version of that tool. But it may not be something where there's enough market opportunity, enough users to make the, and a price point to make the unit economics work out, where you can create a high enough margin business to entice investors and to build a scalable business. Of course, there's examples of where, folks have created essentially lifestyle businesses where it's sustainable for a small group of people, making money from, a small scale software as a service product. But, if the moment you take venture capital, there's more of an expectation of building a business which can yield a substantial return for the investors, and that things get tricky. I think often open source developers get pushed into, or just by necessity of making good on the venture investments that they've taken on, into building some kind of a vertical product or solution for a particular type of user of that software. So I know, like, this is one of the challenges, for example, that the DuckDB project has faced as it's become so popular. popular as a, you know, embedded analytical database. And there's so many different ways that people can use DuckDB. And so when I first met Hannes and Mark, this was before they created DuckDB Labs and the DuckDB Foundation. And so they were, I had, you know, conversations with them. I was trying to give my advice about the navigating the world of open source. And I think what they've done is really great in creating a foundation to maintain, you know, neutrality and to provide, like, have an organization that can support the development of that project while also having the separate DuckDB Labs, which can have commercial relationships, work with partner companies. And so they're, you know, they have a partnership with MotherDuck, which is building a software as a service, kind of building cloud solutions based on DuckDB. And there's a number of other companies which are building things based on DuckDB. So I think, you know, in that particular case, like, they're succeeding at building, you know, maintaining a neutral ground where they're able to focus on building the core technology. But it's more often the case that, unfortunately, that engineers get distracted from the core open source project to building the product that they can monetize and scale that is based on the project. So sometimes things go well and sometimes they don't. But I think navigating that inherent kind of tension, I wouldn't call it a conflict per se, but the tension between the needs of the open source or what is good for the open source community and the open source project itself and the needs and what is best for a business that is built on it. So that's something that it's tricky for every company to navigate and avoid undermining the goodwill that they've built through the open source projects that they've created.
Yeah, good points. And the DuckDB example is a particularly interesting modern one because of the unique relationship between the open source team and now the commercial team, which are actually two separate entities. So I'm an investor in MotherDuck as well as in Voltron Data, your company. So it's exciting to see teams, you know, push the boundaries of sort of innovation in the model of the relationship between the open source and the commercial entity. And I think DuckDB and MotherDuck is a good example of a particularly novel way of looking at that. So I'm excited to see how that proceeds.
For sure.
So as an engineer, I wanted to ask you, you know, because we focus a lot on engineer founders around here, and my favorite question for folks is to understand, what's the most challenging thing, Ben, for you as a startup founder? And this gets to how you might advise other engineers who are debating whether or not they should try to start something new. It's not easy for us engineers to go off and quit our jobs. Maybe it's a little easier these days with the stock market at big tech, you know, being down, but it's still challenging and there's not a lot of security in venturing out to launch your own thing. So I'm curious, like, you've started several companies now and you've been a founder as long as I've known you. And so I'm curious, like, the lessons that you've learned and what inspiration you might give to other folks out there.
Sure. It is challenging. I think one of the principal, you know, the principal challenges for any engineer turned founder is the difference between working in the business versus working on the business. And, you know, it's easy when, you know, you're just perhaps a small group of developers working on a software project or a collection of software projects. I think back when I was really focused on the Pandas project and I would wake up and I would work 10, 12 hours a day writing Python code for Pandas and, you know, just building the project and building the software and the issue tracker and the community around it was all that I thought about. But when you start a company, you have all these other things to think about and the different. So you end up spending a much larger amount of your time basically building business and building the machine that builds the machine, so to speak. And I think learning to think mindfully about those things. And so if you still are writing some code, that you erect boundaries where, you know, you don't put yourself on critical path so that, you know, people are depending on you to finish a pull request or something, but you're caught up with some working on something else that's related to the business. You also have to get comfortable delegating work that you're really excited about. So, like, so many times there's been projects where I say to myself, like, I would love to build that. I would love to work on that. But I realized that, like, the best thing that I could do is, like, I'm sure I'm plenty capable of doing it, is just to give it to somebody else who can also be excited about it. And, you know, I think working to, you know, assemble the right people who have good cultural alignment and who have like the passion and capability to build things. I've gotten a lot of satisfaction out of team building and looking for birds of a feather and to create an environment where you can bring together really smart people and they can thrive and work on projects that are impactful and that are, you know, fulfilling and rewarding for people that you've you know, roped into your startup endeavor.
Well, I love this working on the business, not in the business phrase. It reminds me of that book, The E-Myth, which is not a tech book. I don't know how many folks out there have read that. It's E-Myth by Michael Gerber. Might have been one of the most influential books that I read sort of in my process of becoming a founder over the years. And that's a phrase that I think he coined, which just really opens your eyes when you sort of understand the difference between the two. So yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. The That's really great advice.
You're probably also familiar with the Peter principle, which is that and people tend to get promoted to their level of incompetence, in a sense.
Especially in my case, being Peter.
Yes. but it's not necessarily a natural transition. For example, a really strong individual contributor or a lead developer of an open source project to become a CEO or CTO of a startup, there's a different set of skills which have to be mindfully developed. And I think that one of the most important skills as a founder in general, or an engineer turned founder, is being self-aware and understanding that, like, there's a list of things that you're very good at, and and there's things that you're not good at. And so learning, like, what are the skills that you can develop versus where do you need to seek others who are, much more proficient in the skills that you lack. Like, I recognize, like, I'm not good at everything, and I have, rely on others to fill in those skill gaps so that we have, well-rounded team, a well-rounded organization.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Appreciate those insights. So I want to move on and ask about customers, because one of the most important things any startup needs is customers. And obviously, open source has a particularly unique advantage, sort of a structural advantage, in the way that the software, the bits, are released into the wild and you can start to work with users of the software. Of course, there's still promotion involved, and some people take that for granted. That can be its own thing, promoting an open source project. But that being said, I'm just wondering, how has finding and working with design partners changed for your company sort of over the trajectory of your life as a founder of these last few companies?
Well, I think in recent times, it's been refreshing that I think a larger and larger fraction of corporations understand open source really well. They understand, they've seen, many successful open source businesses. They understand why open source software needs to be a part of the solutions that the company is building. And so I think 10 years ago, there was this tension of, like, why would I do business with this company if they're building software that they're giving away, including to potentially our competitors? And a lot of the companies that I worked closely with early in my career were financial firms, both because, I think after the financial crisis, 2007, 2008, I think a lot of financial firms were looking for ways that they could become, more agile and up-level their tools to become, more effective, more productive. And that was one of the things that was so appealing about Python, and I think why Python caught on in the financial industry so quickly. But at the same time, financial firms aren't well known for giving away a lot of technology. And so I definitely faced that tension of doing work, but then wanting to open source it, having to very carefully kind of navigate those kinds of conversations so that everyone's comfortable about, like, what's proprietary and what's open source and so forth. I think also now that companies have been through multiple cycles of building on open source technology, they've realized the value of having commercial relationships with software vendors that are the key contributors, or, like, among the key contributors in an open source project. And so we recently launched a product called Voltron Data Enterprise Subscription for Arrow. So we launched a support and partner open source partnership program for Apache Arrow. And there's many companies that are retooling parts of their internal data platforms to use Arrow. And so nowadays, it's a no-brainer that, of course, it makes sense to have a commercial relationship with a company who can provide, support and continuity for an engineering team that's building on an open source infrastructure project. So I would say that the customer development is definitely easier now than it was in the past. But, ultimately, I think when you're simultaneously building an open source project, building a community around that, you really have got to invest in building relationships with the developers and the early adopters, and identifying, like, the different segments of the industry. Like, where is this? Like, for example, Arrow, like, we're building, it's about accelerating analytical data processing. And so, finding out the different types of users who are really motivated about improving interoperability, accelerating their data processing, and who can be, like, the early adopters, like the maverick users, where it makes sense to develop an early commercial relationship. So I think the more time that I've spent, sometimes, like, I'll build a relationship, I'll really work on just building a relationship with a company. There's companies that I got to know 10 years ago where you maintain that relationship over a long period of time. You get to see how their technology choices and their needs evolve over time. And that also helps inform and helps me make better decisions about how to spend my time and kind of what sorts of projects to prioritize in the open source to better align the development between the open source stack and kind of the problems that the businesses are facing internally.
Well, I might put you on the spot a little bit with this one, but I'm curious, from a founder's perspective, what do you think has more value in adopting an open source model? Is it the value of the distribution strategy, Or is it the value of the transparency and that customers can trust the software?
It's in most cases, it's a little bit of all of those things. I think the trust and transparency is a big deal that customers feel like, you know, when the core technology or a lot of the core technologies are open source, that you don't have the vendor lock-in that you would have with a pure piece of proprietary software. But from the standpoint of, you know, in my world where we're really focused on interoperability and standards and modularity and composability, you know, we're working to make it easier to plug all these systems together, to make it easier to build a high quality language interfaces. So like we have been defining these different interface points between systems. And if any one of those, you know, protocols or standards or interface specifications were not open source and developed in the open in the community, it would be harder for us to drive those as universal, kind of the lingua franca or like the universal standard. And so I think, you know, everyone understands that and they see like, oh, well, absolutely, this needs to be, you know, everything that you're doing around kind of the development of these fundamental standards needs to be the open source, or even to the point of like, it's not enough to be open source on GitHub. It's like, is it, I think the governance starts to come into play. It's like, how are decisions made in the project? Is there a model for other companies to get a seat at the table to participate in the project's governance? Or is it a, you know, Voltron Data open source project where you're going to make all the decisions and there's no path for another company to get a seat at the table? And so I know that's been a challenge for some of the large tech companies and their open source projects. Like I think Meta, like Presto was an example of where there were some challenges around governance and the need to how decisions were made and around bestowing, you know, committer rights and things like that. It's very tricky, but I think, you know, at the business level, I think there's the distribution model, the ability to build something that can become ubiquitous and can become, you know, dependency of systems and widely deployed without the friction of having a sales conversation. It's huge. And so new ideas can spread like wildfire and transform the tech stack in less than a decade. And it's pretty amazing, really.
Really is. Yeah, I certainly appreciate those thoughts. Well, Wes, we need to let you go, but one question in parting. What advice would you have for other engineers who want to build their own personal brand and reputation? Any tips for them?
Yeah. Well, I would say don't be a jerk. that's definitely a big one. I think relationship building is a huge part of, I think, building your open source brand and building connections with other developers. I think now that COVID is not over, but at least conferences are resuming. I know Data Council has an upcoming conference. Those are always a great place if you can, you know, afford it or get your company to sponsor you. Great place to build relationships with other open source developers. I think building that network of people who, you know, understand what you're motivated about and like what you're excited about helps also create like this sort of word of mouth promotion, where if you're building something new and trying to get people to care about it or contribute or to catch on, that other people understand what you're building and that you aren't, you know, working in isolation. So for me, like being helpful, looking for ways to contribute to others, certain give and take, and, you know, people you give to others, you volunteer your time, and that, you know, comes back to benefit you later. But open source being a small community it's very relationship driven. And so I think the more, you know, time spent building your network and getting to know others and understanding what makes them tick and what makes you tick, so that, you know, you create more opportunities for serendipitous collaborations and who knows, you know, a relationship that's built today, maybe not now is the time to work together, but maybe five or seven years in the future, there's an opportunity and you already have that connection and it makes getting started that much easier.
Yeah, we see that so many times, right? In the nurturing and seeding of those relationships early, and who knows what kind of fruit that can produce later on. So I definitely agree with those thoughts. Well, thanks, Wes. It's always great to see you, and I appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you, Pete.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Zero Prime Podcast. I hope you enjoyed my chat today with Wes McKinney. If you'd like to get in touch with Wes, you can find him on Twitter at Wes, M-C-K-I-N-N. And you can find more info on his company, Voltron Data, at voltrondata.com.
If you like hearing from engineer founders on the cutting edge of enterprise startups and developer tools, please leave us a review on your favorite podcast app and subscribe to the show. We'll see you next time.